When I was a kid, the hot new development in playtime was the advent of video games. I remember when Pong first came onto the scene, soon followed by Space Invaders and Pac-Man. And I remember there were people who complained that kids were just wasting their time. They should be doing more wholesome things like playing pinball. And of course, when pinball came onto the scene a couple of decades earlier, I'm sure there were people who were complaining about that pernicious development. I can appreciate all of this now because I am the father of a 9-year-old who is happy when he finds himself in front of an iPad or a phone and has an opportunity to play Angry Birds or Minecraft or Candy Crush. If only kids would play the good old games, everything would be fine. Well, I have some good news. The world is not going to hell in a handbasket. Sometimes the old ways endure. Sometimes they still hold the attention of young and old alike. Drive by any playground these days, and you will still see kids scampering about playing tag. You'll see them flocking to the slide, going up and down on the teeter-totter, enjoying a spin on the swings. The games that we enjoyed, our parents enjoyed, our grandparents enjoyed when we were little still command the attention of kids. One game I've not yet mentioned that is still a perennial favorite is hide and seek. It's a great game. It requires no equipment, no financial outlay, no batteries. It can be played anywhere, indoors or out, and you can play with as few as 2 kids. And for the children who are very imaginative, 1 or many kids. All you need are some places that people want to hide, and someone who is willing to be the seeker. It's good, clean, wholesome fun. But of course, those of us who have children, those of us who have been children, know that our little boys and girls are fallen creatures, just like you and I. Sometimes the desire to be impish overwhelms their kinder impulses. Sometimes, to be frank, they just decide to be little rotters. Maybe this has happened to you. Maybe you did it to someone else when playing hide and seek. The countdown begins and everybody bolts for the perfect hiding place. And the person who is supposed to do the seeking all of a sudden accelerates the count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. And before you get to hide, little Johnny or Jane is out after you, spoiling your fun. Or, and this one is always heartbreaking when I contemplate this, and I say this seriously, little Johnny or Jane is the seeker and is playing by the rules, counts down slowly, and when he or she is done, all of the other kids have vanished. They've disappeared. They're gone. What to seek? Who to seek? There was a vision of what to do, and a cold, cruel reality has come crashing into the dream. Jesus is speaking to this kind of reality in today's text. We heard what sounded like a very nice, unified passage, but the reality is these are a series of bullet point observations by Jesus, and they are embedded within the Sermon on the Mount. We need this context if we are to fully appreciate what Jesus is about here. Think about who came to hear Jesus when he offered those famous words. Peasants, subsistence farmers, people desperately struggling to get by, people who were seeking a word of hope and possibility, some sign that God was indeed present in the world, that there was a place for those that life seemed to have cast aside, that the kingdom wasn't just meant for the wealthy and the powerful, but for everybody. That's who Jesus is speaking to. And that's what today's lesson, especially the verse about where your treasure is, you will find your heart, are directed. Jesus here is not acting as some first century financial guru, nor is he engaging in pop psychology. But instead, he is addressing the deepest yearnings of human beings. Jesus knew that you and I are meant to make meaning. We seek it in our world, and we impose it on our world. So Jesus, who we know is a very thoughtful and careful preacher, very intentionally uses the word treasure. He doesn't say where your money is, where your stuff is. He talks about treasure. Now, what comes to mind for you when I mention that word? Let me offer one possible image that I suspect some of you thought of. A pirate's chest. Yeah? Big wooden box with iron bands on it. It's overflowing with gold doubloons and jewels and necklaces. And perhaps you see it on a beach, and there are palm trees in the background. And riding at anchor on an azure sea is the pirate ship. And then by the chest, a shovel and a hole and some pirates. Those pirates treasure the chest. It contains all of their dreams, their hopes, their possibility, the future. And what are they going to do with it? They're going to put it in a hole in the ground. And based on all the movies and books and stories that have been told about pirates and their treasure, they're never going to get it back out of the ground, are they? So, they will have thieved, maybe killed, they will become fugitives, they may be caught and executed. For what? A bunch of shiny rocks and stones buried in a hole in the ground. That's their treasure. Now, before we get on our high horses and sneer at the pirates, let us acknowledge that the attraction to jewels and to gold and other shiny things has been with humans throughout history and across cultures. Think of the stories told about the search and quest for gold. Indeed, think of the history that was formed and driven by the search for gold. Empires have risen and fallen because of a desire for gold. Why are we attracted to it? It is shiny, and we do like shiny things, and it's pretty, and we like pretty things, and it's rare. We like things that are rare. perhaps because deep down, in that little reptilian part of our brain, the first part that emerged as we evolved was that fear of scarcity and not having enough. And so when something is rare, we want to get our hands onto it and hold tight to it. If only we have more, everything will be okay. But life doesn't work that way. Robert Frank, a professor at Cornell, wrote a book a few years back called Richistan. And he spent time talking with and visiting with and traveling amongst the super wealthy in our country. He wanted to see what makes them tick. Frank's an economist, and he studies patterns of acquisition and the distribution of wealth. So he went to talk to some people who were millionaires. And he asked, you have $1 million. How much would you need to feel secure? And the answer came back, $2 million. They talked to some people who had $10 million. And to feel secure, they needed $20 million. And those with $100 million wanted $200 million. We have seen, bearing out Frank's research, evidence of billionaires who are not satisfied with what they have and want more. I lift this up not as a critique of the rich, but it's an illustration of a deep, deeply embedded dynamic. We want more to feel secure and safe and grounded. But the problem is we're often seeking the wrong thing. We know the house can burn down. The stock market can crater. Whims and fashions and fancies can change, depriving things we care about of value. We think gold should be treasured. And if I asked you, which is the greater treasure, a bar of gold or a bunch of bananas, which would you choose? I suspect many people would say the bar of gold. But it's the bananas that can give us nourishment and vitamins and nutrients. The gold can give us pleasure. The bananas can give us life. What do we treasure? What do we value? What do we invest with meaning? Something becomes a treasure because we choose to treasure it. And we might think, no, it is the gold that is the true treasure. But as all of those zombie apocalypse TV shows and movies are reminding us, when civilization goes by the wayside, it's going to be the bananas we want. What do we treasure? What do we value? What Jesus is doing in this passage as he makes this observation to his audience of first century farmers and laborers, and through the gospel to us here today, is offer a gift of choice. Jesus empowers us to assign value to things. We get to choose what to treasure. And if we do so faithfully and thoughtfully and reverently, we will never need to worry. As I was preparing this sermon, I came across a story from a number of years ago. Some of you may remember Osceola McCarthy. She was a cleaning lady in Mississippi. By all outward appearances, this woman was broke. She didn't have a car, and she walked to work. She went to church faithfully, bringing a Bible that was held together with scotch tape. Finally, in her late 80s, it was time to retire her bucket and her mop. She started thinking about how she was going to wrap things up. And one of the things she did surprised the folks at the University of Southern Mississippi. It was one day, not knowing who this woman was, not expecting this particular envelope, they found a check for $150,000 that was to be used to fund a scholarship for minority students. Of course, this made news, and people were all interested in hearing about her, and she received attention in the press, and Harvard gave her a graduate degree. But she was asked, "You worked so hard and lived so frugally over those years. Why didn't you do something for yourself?" And her response was, "I did do it for myself." She knew this was the thing that was going to give her pleasure and joy and meaning. Think about all of the lives that Ms. McCarthy affected. Now, I am often a little leery of telling stories like this because they involve people we've never met and are never going to know, and they seem like illustrations that come outside of some kind of preacher's manual. But I share this story because it reminded me of someone that many of us did know. And I want to lift up this member of the congregation because a person who passed away a few years back lived this kind of life. Many people in this church have lived this kind of life, let me say, over the years. But I mention Elaine Cook because she was just about the very first person I met in this church. And I got to know her before she passed on. This was a woman who worked hard. She built a career for herself at the bank. She gave her heart and soul to this church, serving as a trustee, among other things. I know she liked to come to worship looking just right, which was a reflection of her belief of how important praising God was. But she did not live a pretentious life. And then she passed away. It was only after she was gone, and I got a phone call from the bank, that I learned of her bequest to this church. And it was a big one. Look at a lot of the work that's been done on this building over the last few years. Elaine helped make that possible. And there was still a lot left over to invest to support the future ministry of the church. Elaine did not look for any recognition during her life. But she wanted the fruits of her life's work to support this church, and I can tell you, many other organizations in the Upper Valley. Elaine chose what to treasure. That's where her heart was. That is the gift that Jesus gives us, this great insight into how we work as humans. We can choose where to invest our energies, what to invest with meaning, and in so doing, we can shape our lives and determine where our energies are going to go. That is the message of Stewardship Sunday. This day isn't to make a pitch to you, to give us money so we can turn the lights on and pay for the heat, staff the committees, Turn out the volunteers. Find that rare skill we need to make this place go. As worthy as all of these things are. No, this is the day when we take a step back and marvel at the confidence God has in each of us. We are stewards. We are people in whom a great treasure has been entrusted. We are given the power to make a choice. There are lots of things in this life that clamor for our attention, and they can distract us, and we get lost. Indeed, when we are distracted, we can be hidden. That's right, we can be hidden from the one who is seeking us out. Our God, our Creator, who has made us. If we open our hearts and our minds and our souls to God's Spirit and God's grace and God's love, we will find a treasure that will endure, that will sustain us, that will feed us, that will give us true life.